Onagalcast continues with the Mortal Kombat Street Fighter Retro Series. This week we'll be discussing Mortal Kombat Legacy and Legacy 2. Per usual, this will contain harsh language and plot spoilers. Listener discretion is advised. We did it, folks. We're past the friggin' rain. And not just the character rain. We trekked through Mortal Kombat. We've trekked through Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Now we're getting to the good stuff. Legacy.
Yay!
And I can tell, Kendra, you're excited about this one.
Hell yeah!
This is a series I didn't know anything about. Apparently, this was a web series, correct?
Yes, it was.
And this came out in 2011, no less. Which, apparently, anything could now be done on the web. See, back in, I guess, the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to do anything on the World Wide Web, it was impossible. You know, you just had independent film. And my point being is that today, if you try to do any type of franchise, you have to be directing a music video, you have to be directing a TV series. 70s, 80s, and 90s, independent filmmakers can make comic book movies or movies like Mortal Kombat. Not today. So, it's ingenious how, apparently, the co-creator of Mortal Kombat, Ed Boon, was behind the helm, at least, to give us Legacy. Put it on the web. Have about 9, 12-minute episodes. But we get it on Blu-ray now, and it's like a movie format. Now, I'm assuming, and this is where it gets a little confusing for me. This is not so much a reboot. Is this a sequel or part reboot? Because there are times that the tournament has been discussed. And that's where it has a giant question mark over my head.
I apologize, I didn't know that was a question.
They said at some points it was a reboot, and at some points it was just kind of a reimagining.
Can we just call it what it is? It's them doing it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? We'll leave it at that. I think the council can agree on all of that. Yeah. We get a bit of Jax. We get Spawn. This time is, you know, Jax. We've got Jeri Ryan from Voyager as Sonya. Yes. And eventually we'll have Carrie returning as Shang Tsung. But that'll be in Legacy 2. Tonight we're just going to take care of Legacy 1. Now, the first two parts of this, we've got the whole Jax, Sonya, Kano storyline. Which I believe is just called, in front of me, Kano and Jax. So this would be a total for these two, it's a two-parter, it would be close to 24 minutes. For this two-parter web series episode.
Right.
Now, the last time we discussed this with Kano, we never really got his origin. This time we kind of sort of get it. So for the first one we get for the episode, Sonya has been captured by Kano. And we...
She doesn't immediately go damsel in distress.
No, she doesn't go damsel in distress, no. And this is what I kind of like about with Jeri Ryan. We know she's not going to go... But it's one of these, I'm going to make a mistake and get captured. But it's not...
Right.
It's pretty much not... But on the other hand, was Sonya ever a damsel in distress? And the only thing that bothered me about the first Mortal Kombat movie and with Annihilation, her Achilles heel is that her emotions got the best of her.
Yeah.
Is that for the first one, because she didn't have any trust issues, that's how she got captured by Shang Tsung. In the second movie, it's because Johnny Cage died and she couldn't trust anybody again because she was afraid that Jax was going to get killed, and that's how she almost died. Here, I'm assuming, again, it's back to Kano killing her partner. She's Ahab, Kano is Moby Dick, and she makes a mistake and she gets captured. And now...
I'll let it go on Star Wars reference.
Well, you know me and my... Well, we got a Star Trek person in this one. We got Jeri...
My epic geekitude knows no bounds right now.
But here's the thing. We get...
Simulate this, bitch.
Yeah. We've got an interesting actor this time around for Kano. And for this one, it is Darren Shalaviv, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly. I don't know... I'm sorry, did we have something to say?
He did. He said, we're going to assume that you are.
Yeah. I'm not too familiar with Darren Shalaviv. Are you at all? Because I've never...
Yeah, he did a really great Kano.
He did a great Kano.
Yeah, that...
Beyond that, I don't know him at all. He looks like he
could
be, so...
He seems to be in a lot of kung fu movies. He's in a lot of kung fu movies, apparently. Yeah, and he's also in the directed DVD movie of The Marine Part 3, because the first one, of course, had... the first one had John Cena. Now he's going to be the John Cena character, yeah.
With Miz?
Yeah.
Third and fourth. The Miz? Oh, yeah, that's right. The third and the fourth are with the Miz. I'm awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry.
He was in 300 as a Persian.
Well, he chose the wrong side.
Right.
Let's see. He's also going to be in Tomorrowland as a tough guard. That Disney movie with George Clooney.
Yeah.
And he's in a sequel to Kickboxer, which was the Jean-Claude Van Damme franchise. He's going to be in that.
Wow, they're still making
They're rebooting
sequels.
It.
They're rebooting it?
Oh, they're rebooting it. Okay. I was like, wow, they're still making sequels to that damn thing?
Evidently so.
Reboot, not sequel.
Reboot.
Well, tomato, tomato. And apparently he's been in a Medal of Honor game.
Yay.
I wouldn't know. I don't play Medal of Honor.
That's quite a resume. So Kano was his first, like, name... Not a minor character?
Yeah, I mean... I'm assuming so. But again, I was never too much of a fan of this character anyway. But here they've kind of changed his origin around a little bit more. They, of course, still have the origin story of why Kano and Sonya hate each other. We do know that. We have more of Jax. And as I said, this time it's Michael Jai White... Spawn, or better yet, that guy in the Dark Knight that the Joker just pretty much, you know, stabs the knife through his throat. But this one seemed to be a little bit more fast and to the point. We, of course, get some better action sequences between Kano and Jax, and eventually when Sonya gets free. Then, of course, we get to Kano getting, I guess, the left side of his eye shot off. And now we get kind of like...
No, not shot off.
Blown off.
Physically breaks his skull open to, and his eye flies out of his socket.
Well, yeah, it looked like it was shot, though, and I mean, I know how it gets... It's one of those, like, Looney Tunes type of violence as things for this episode.
Still, Jai White handled his inner Mike Tyson for that shot.
Yes.
Which is pretty funny, because he was the one who played Mike Tyson in the HBO game.
Yeah.
Oh, he did play Mike Tyson, that's right.
Yeah.
So, now we kind of get the origin of him getting that faceplate on him. Like, it's a cybernetic eye. Which is something I believe he was trying to find when Sonya was going after Kano. So it kind of goes full circle in this one. But for this sequence, of course, I gotta ask you, it's gotta be an improvement from the first movie.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And definitely a better fighting sequence, I think, than we got from the last movie.
Combined.
Well, one of the things I liked about this one, too, is with the Sonya Kano Jax thing, is at the end of it, after he, you know, busted up Kano and then saved Sonya from the exploding device, it sets up for him getting his bionic arms.
Yeah. Nice, neat little package.
Well, his bionic arms, and of course his bionic eye.
No. I meant Jack's getting his
bionic arms. Oh, Jack's getting the bionic arms. Yeah, definitely Jack's getting the bionic arms. But again, I'm not too sure the whole point of him getting the arms, though, other than the fact that it was just another bionic type of person. But Jax, I like the actor. I'm still not into the character so much. But again, that's just me. Okay. But it's a vast improvement for the other two people who play Jax.
Yeah.
So, this one, I want to make sure I get it correctly. This one was kind of sort of my favorite. The Johnny Cage episode.
Yeah, you got caged.
Yeah. This one is kind of a heartbreaker because this is a weird one, I think. Probably the weirdest I've ever seen. We kind of get this in 12 minutes or less. A different origin with Cage. It still goes back to him being a fake. He is trying to do reality shows. Apparently, as a kid, he was bullied. He becomes this overnight sensation. He's a former Power Ranger, if you could believe it. I don't know which series of Power Rangers he was on, but they do make a big deal that he was a Power Ranger. Yeah. But apparently he's lost all his money. He's tried to put together a reality show called You Got Caged, which is probably the most interesting. He's, I guess, going after thieves, beating the crap out of them, and taking back their stolen goods, but apparently they've been stealing his pirated DVDs, if you can wrap your head around that one.
Oh, that was a joke.
Wait,
is
it DVD?
Was a joke.
Well, yeah, there are people that apparently have been selling pirated DVDs of his life, because he's been in all these really bad kung fu movies.
No, come on. Give props where props are due. This one was an epic retelling of Johnny Cage.
Oh, I'm going to get there.
Go for it.
Oh, I'm definitely going to get there with that. Of course, we have it. I guess it's his agent and the producer. They're pretty much saying that he's a waste of time and a flash in the pan. So he spends about $50,000 again to put together a different type of DVD where nobody's interested. He sitting, I guess, behind a soundstage or whatever, and the agent and a producer looks to a female Johnny Cage, and they pretty much steal his idea. So he pretty much beats the crap out of everybody in the soundstage. The producer,
that's
the...
That's all you want him to get.
Right, yeah.
And... I'm into so mad.
And...
Now, one of the things that I liked about this iteration of the telling of Johnny Cage's story is in the old games and the current games and all that, he is like this super to-do, you know, movie star. My question is I don't care how badass you are at Kung Fu or whatever, if you're in multi-million dollar status, the hell are you going to get into a damn combat situation for? I don't know any multi-billionaire that's going to be like, oh, fatalities, I'm in this. Let me get down.
Batman.
They're going to turn around and get the fuck out of Dodge.
Batman.
He's down on his luck. He has something to prove. So now he actually has motivation for getting in the tournament, instead of just being, oh, well, I'm here to, like, sign autographs and shit. You know, that's one of the things that I actually really dug about this iteration.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is that Johnny Cage is supposed to be based a little bit on Jean-Claude Van Damme, because he originally was supposed to be in the video game Past, and then, you know, Johnny Cage is based on him. The problem is that I've watched a lot of these 70s, 80s, and 90s action movies, and by the 90s, they had peaked. People who were getting sick and tired of Schwarzenegger. I think the last great film that he was in was probably Eraser. I did not like End of Days. I have not seen... What was that other movie about the... I think The Sixth Day. Didn't see it. Jean-Claude Van Damme, I couldn't even tell you other than Street Fighter and Sudden Death. Sudden Death is probably my last favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. Stallone, Judge Dredd. It is a guilty pleasure for me. I mean, I can go on and on with... And of course, we are going to be discussing Demolition Man. But I can go...
Sorry.
Guilty pleasure in this house.
Yes.
I love that movie.
Oh, don't...
Yes.
We're going to be eating Taco Bell while watching this movie.
Yes.
And listening to the jingles of the Jolly Green Giant while watching this movie. I love Demolition Man.
What was the other one? My dog's better than your dog. My dog's better than yours.
Yeah. Sorry, Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Yeah, the Oscar Mayer Wiener song. No, Arbor Hot Dogs. That's what it was. Arbor Hot Dogs.
Yeah.
But the problem is that action movies and the stars are starting to peak. So I like the idea with Johnny Cage. He's doing the tournament because people just don't care about these action movies anymore. He's on his last limb. Even with the original Mortal Kombat movie, he still had to do something to prove himself, that he wasn't just a fake and he wasn't just doing it for the fame and the fortune. That's what I got out of this. But this is where it got kind of confusing. I understand that he's on his last limbs. I understand that the agent and the producer had stolen his idea for the reality show because they claim that nobody watches reality shows anymore, which is bullshit, because you can go on any channel now and you'll see like 55 different reality shows. And then some. Every time one gets canceled, 25 more take its place. But apparently we get Shang Tsung. Now this is not... Was this a younger Shang Tsung before Carrie came along to reprise his role?
I thought it was Quan Chi.
You actually see him a couple times, but you see the young version of him, but I think it's just a glamour.
Okay. And this is, of course... Yeah, this is him, you know, coming back into the tournament. Then we get another great two-part episode. One I've been wanting since the last Mortal Kombat. Katana and Melina.
Very well done, part of that.
Oh, amazing!
Another two-part episode, 24 minutes. This was a great two-parter.
Yes.
Because we're finally getting... Because in the last two movies, if you want to call it, we don't really know anything about how, you know, Katana's homeworld was taken over and how Outworld changed it and, you know, what was the whole point of Baraka, because he was in the last movie but he wasn't really utilized, he was just a guy in a mask.
Right.
Yeah.
We're getting a better origin between these two and how they're being used as weapons. It's almost what Guardians of the Galaxy should have been between Nebula and Gamora.
Yes.
You know, where Thanos comes in. And I kind of have a feeling... I'm not saying the Guardians of the Galaxy stole this idea because they did come out, like, in the 60s, but I kind of wonder, because they've kind of retold Guardians, like, who came up with this idea first, but whatever the case may be, this, to me, about sisters having a guy come in, destroy the world, pairing these two up and saying, you're a family now, I'm training you as weapons. I think this is a much better story about how this was told.
Well, but you have to think about it. They didn't know that at first. I mean, yeah, they were training, but they didn't know... She didn't really realize anything happened until later in the, like, the sequence. Katana, at least. He just was playing the sides. They were just being raised until figurative shit hit the fan, and they started having them go out and kill everyone who was associated with the actual lie that he wasn't really their dad.
Which is something that I like, because Sindel in this... Well, we see Sindel for a very short time, but it's a much better actor, I find.
Yeah, she was beautiful.
Yeah.
She was gorgeous.
And a much better line read, too, I might add as well. Even for a webisode. And... Yeah.
Series is like straight up giving 100% to this. It's
yeah. Can you hear them?
Yeah, can you just repeat that? I'm sorry, I got cut off.
The person that's directing Mortal Kombat Legacy is actually a big time person. Not, you know, I mean, Kevin Takeri on this is just amazing.
Unfortunately, he's not coming back for season 3, which sucks.
What?
Yeah.
It's also busy with season 2 of Street Fighter Assassin's Fist, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's gotten better, too, I think.
Yeah.
They blew me out of the water with that, so...
Yeah, I think we... Kevin pretty much is what Joss Whedon should have been for Avengers Age of Ultron, or what... if they would have given him more creative control. But I shall move on with that statement.
It's a whole other ball of yarn.
Yeah, another ball of yarn. But then, of course, we get to the second part of the story, where we get a better idea between the battle of these two sisters. And Katana, of course, she goes on a small journey, for argument's sake. And she goes into the Eden Forest, where she's trying to find herself, and she's trying to find her sister, and what really happened, and why these two are being trained. It's a better flashback. And, of course, this ends about how Shao Kahn taking over was all a lie, and that Baraka, of course, invaded their castle in the homeworld many years beforehand, and that Shao Kahn was just manipulating both the sisters. So now Melina realizes that Katana is not only her sister, but she's also like this half-human, half... what are they called? Tarakans? Tarakans. That's what they're called. So now we see on the side of where Melina's going to fight and where Katana's going to fight, and of course... we see that both these sisters are going to be fighting in the tournament. And, of course, we get that echo round one fight. This...
I actually care about these characters now, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
Yeah.
Yeah, you actually give a shit about these characters now.
I mean, like, Katana in the first movie. I mean, she was like... I'm here to deliver these lines and fight very badly.
Well,
not in that order, but I'm just going to do it that way anyways. You know, and she just felt like a puppet. And in this one, these girls actually are conveying emotion and, you know, everything else. And they did it right, damn it.
Well, it's amazing what you can do in under 24 minutes.
Yes.
And tell the story the correct way in 24 minutes or less, which is actually pretty sad for a webisode that they couldn't do for a two-year movie.
Take that, Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Well, now, okay. Hold on before we're too harsh here. Think about the time frame and what they had available to them at that time.
I'm not going by the special effects. I'm going by the story. Not how the women are fighting. I'm going by who they could have picked as actors. Because they were picking models to play these actors. That's the problem that I have. So they couldn't deliver the line reads. That's the only complaint that I have with that one.
Well, no, see, that part I agree with. I mean, you're not fully prepared that episode 5 sucked. But, for the time, you geeked out. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I admit, the 15-year-old kid in me geeked out when I first saw Scorpion throw his fake-ass digital...
when I was Jamie.
His fake-ass digital dragon harpoon thingy across the street, Johnny Cage.
Whatever.
Then they hearken you back to everything that came before that with Legacy, hence the name Legacy, and why they did it so damn right. Because they pulled out all the backstories. They were like, oh, you're a fan? Well, guess what? Nerd out on all this.
And that's why I find this, because it's not just about the fight. And this is why I've always cared about the characters and their stories. Even Katana, which, again, I can go... and even Melina, which I can go back to over and over again. Melina's this not, you know, this pretty face, and then she removes the veil, and she starts to eat the characters or whatever. So, definitely, much better story.
Yeah.
All right. Might as well bring the torches and pitchforks on this one. Raiden. I'm 50-50 on this one for Raiden. I have a lot of questions
now,
hold on this one.
I will throw on this one. Because the actual guy who made it even said that this was his interpretation of what he saw could have happened with Raiden. And I adore it.
Here's the only problem I have. It's the only problem.
Go.
Okay. Raiden comes down from the heavens and crash lands into an insane asylum.
Conveniently.
As a child of the 70s, 80s, and everything I've seen and read, this trope has been done a lot. I mean, there was a show, Night Court, where not one but three people claimed they were either from the future or aliens, and the twist ending was you had to use your imagination and wonder whether it was true or not. I've read Ray Bradbury's The Earthmen, where astronauts from Earth went to Mars, claimed they were from Earth, and the twist was is that they were given a key, they thought it was a key to the city, and they actually go into this room and it's an insane asylum. They think, because there are these other aliens that also claim they're from Earth, but they're from different planets. So that was the only problem I had with Raiden being in the insane asylum. Only problem I had with it. Love the actor. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a much... I mean, again, I've gotten so many torches and pitchforks about, you know, complaining about Christopher Lambert and, you know, Darth Maul. This actor is a little bit more solemn, but then again, he's sedated most of the time, so he can't use his powers. I do enjoy the fact when he's tasered and he's kind of being charged up like a battery. That's awesome. But my question is, of course, is that girl that's there that I guess is, she's there for slitting her wrists. She's an assisted suicide. Or some, right? She's attempted suicide?
I think so.
Yeah.
What exactly happens to her after Raiden leaves? Because I got confused.
She never answers that.
She just stays there, or...
Well, it never really... It doesn't even allude to anything after he leaves. I mean, surely the guys are gonna... I mean, you can tell common sense would dictate that the two, the warden and whatever, the innkeeper or whatever, they're gonna break into the room, they're gonna grab her, she's gonna go back into a cell, but... I mean, they don't really... It's not really about her. She just releases Raiden from his corporeal form.
They can't really do anything with her. She's already in the sand.
Think of lobotomize her.
Yeah, they're probably just going to lobotomize her. So, unfortunately, in Mortal Kombat, it's a dark world we live in. You know, you'll have those loose ends that you just kind of think about yourself, and you're just like, well, how did that really end?
Right.
Well, she does save him from being lobotomized, because the entire... This almost feels like Terminator 2, in a way, where Sandra Connor is trying to warn everybody that the future's going to end. I was almost waiting for Raiden to say, you know, you're going to be dead in 15 years, and you're going to be dead, and you're going to be dead. It started to feel a lot like, you know... Terminator 2. But... It's 12 minutes, again... So, Raiden, of course, is being interviewed. He's trying to explain, but they keep sedating him so he can't use his full potential of his lightning powers. He's trying to bust out of the asylum a couple times. The girl who's has attempted suicide does believe him, because it's a mental institution. She does, in fact, save him from being lobotomized on the table. But then when the guards, of course, taser him, you can see he's starting to be re-energized. Does the kung fu moves. He busts out of there with his powers. And then, of course, he gets his famous... I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. Conical hat. Which he just walks up to somebody and takes it and walks away from. Like a boss.
That's called swagger right there.
Yeah. As the kids would say, yeah.
No, the kids would say, I don't fuck with you.
Right?
Anyway, my
That's
bad.
Come well.
Yes! Anyway, I'm sorry.
But we finally get Kong Lao. At least we'll get him when we talk about him next week. What were your thoughts on this one with the Raiden episode? Yeah, hold on a second. Okay, what are your thoughts on this one for the Raiden episode?
The Raiden episode, I adored it. I liked the concept. It may have been a cliche previously used a ton, but it was something that was different for the Mortal Kombat universe. It brought in this feeling of absolute hopelessness and brought a darkness to the series that, yes, there's gory and yes, there's, you know, the absolute brutalities and fatalities, but this one actually brought in the mental aspect of it. Like, how would you feel being not only trapped in a body that you can't escape from, but also being imprisoned with people who have drugged you to the point where you can't function and are about to lobotomize you. Absolutely astoundingly done.
I agree with her.
I would have almost liked to see Shang Tsung somehow disguised as the warden, because he's a shapeshifter, and anything to get him to make sure he's not in the tournament. But I guess that's okay. For 12 minutes, it's not a bad episode. But speaking of origin stories, we get the one we've always wanted. So take that, Paul Anderson, for Mortal Kombat. Two-parter. Yeah. Sub-Zero and Scorpion. These two are my favorite.
Oh, so depressing, but so freaking well done.
Well done. Oh, I found it to be a chiller, pardon the pun. I love the special effects of how the family got frozen. For a webisode, that was a great effect.
Yeah.
We'll be back right after this.
Ah, brave new world that has such putzes in it. You know, kids, a lot has changed while your old Uncle Joker's been away. New Gotham, new rules, even a new Batman.
It isn't 65 years in the future, but Legends of the Dark Knight has gone beyond. Batman Beyond, that is.
Ah, the new boy. Ears are too long and I miss the cape, but not too shabby, not too shabby at all.
Join Steve and Mike as they delve into the remaining episodes of the podcast, where they'll cover Batman Beyond, products, games, and more. Check it out only on GeekCastRadio.com.
Grab your helmets because it's time to assemble MASK. The GeekCast Radio Network has launched Masked Mayhem with your hosts Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike. This podcast covering all 75 episodes of MASK will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talk on the toys, and more. Masked Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Get your spectrums ready as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.
So, with Sub-Zero and Scorpion in this one, it feels like the Hatfields and McCoys, where it's all about the property, and if you invade my property, it's war, and vice versa. But we have the Sub-Zero and Scorpion that we all know as kids playing. Like, they don't understand why one can't go on the other person's property. And, of course, I guess we got Scorpion's father. That's what it is, right? Who, of course, has the famous line, "Get over here." Yeah, get over here. But here, it's more along the lines of him telling him to get over here because, you know, I'm your father, you're my son, you have to listen to me more. It's still intimidating in a way, but it's not as intimidating as it'd be in the game. But I kind of like how these two are growing up. They want to be friends, but they're still honoring the family tradition that, I guess, Scorpion's family and Sub-Zero's family will never get along because that's just the way things always have been. Then, of course, we get... I guess it's Quan Chi that interferes between this blood feud?
Yeah.
No, Quan Chi is what ignited it because of what Shang Tsung wanted.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of, like... He if I understood this correctly, and I'm assuming that I do, he's the one who's responsible of having Sub-Zero freeze Scorpion's family to death.
It's actually never Sub-Zero that actually does any of this.
Right, but it's Quan Chi, though, that does it.
Right.
Shang Tsung asks Quan Chi to do this for him as a favor. And in turn, not only does he get Hanzo Hayashi's, or whatever his name is, soul, but he gets to create his own fighter to go into the Mortal Kombat tournament.
So, yeah, and then, of course, we get where, yeah, Scorpion's soul, he'll always get revenge, in other words. So, it's like, if you participate in the tournament, you'll have your revenge. But we get the effects in this one where they're frozen, the family. Did you find this to be much better than what they did in the last two Mortal Kombat movies?
It gives a better explanation for the hatred.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Quan Chi, because we really don't know too much about him. I'm assuming you're more of the expert on him than I am.
He's a big, pale, white, bald badass.
And kind of reminds me a little bit of Kratos from God of War. He's a little bit more manipulative. Now, he works for Outworld. In other words, he's kind of like the sorcerer for Shang Tsung.
They had a kind kind of a working relationship. They weren't friends, they weren't enemies, they were just kind of, it was a mutual respected sorcerer kind of thing.
Yeah.
Quan Chi is supposed to be a more powerful.
Yeah, Quan Chi is actually more powerful than Shang. But Shang always likes to think that because he can absorb the souls of those he kills, that he's the more powerful. La-da-da-da-da. You know, let's whip them out and see which one's bigger, basically. It's between those two.
Pretty much. This one I'm not too much of a fan of for this final one. Cyrax and Sektor.
Yeah.
You liked, well, I guess they're a little bit better than Mortal Kombat Annihilation, of course. So I don't know if they're supposed to be based on the Predator or not, the way that they're designed, because they have dreadlocks.
No idea.
The dreadlocks are actually interlink points for when they go on, like, sleep mode or whatever you want to call it. They can upload various programs, check system evaluations and all that other jazz, upgrade weapon capabilities and whatnot. Each one of those dreadlocks hooks into a primary function of the cybernetic body.
Okay, so so it's pretty much Avatar then.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get another origin story again between Cyrax and Sektor. And apparently, there was a clan known as, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, Lin Kuei, okay, sorry. And
it was actually Scorpion's.
Oh, that was Sub-Zero. Lin Kuei is Sub-Zero.
Right, these are the ninja assassins that apparently were kidnapping children for centuries and training them to be assassins.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have two of the assassins for today, and we have Cyrax, who's, I guess, supposed to be part of this cyber initiative. He doesn't want to, but he has no choice. He's being forced to be part of a cyborg project. No.
Okay, so the Lin Kuei, the old man that you see, you'll meet him later in the little webisode.
Yes.
He is the new leader of the Lin Kuei. The Grandmaster. He is trying to make these assassins, ninjas, whatever you want to call them, better. And to have more control over them. The fact that you see the guy saying, no, I don't want to do this, the Lin Kuei is falling into ruins, you know, this is the wrong step, that's what he's trying to kill out. Is any and all rebuttals from any of the faction below him. He doesn't want anybody to be able to do that, and the way that he's doing that is he's got the doctor with Kano, who is basically, you know, exchanging everything about them that makes them human, except for the fact that, you know, they'll still be there, but they're taking everything out and putting in cybernetic parts. They're making it to where, forgive me for the Clockwork Orange reference here, but they're basically debasing their mind. They're taking away any chance for them to react to what they're seeing. So the stuff that makes them human is still there, just the response is no longer there.
So pretty much this is what RoboCop Part 2 should have been.
Yes.
Actually, it's only the RoboCop reboot.
Yeah.
Huh, there you go. I will confess one thing. I do like the robotic bodies for these two characters. I think they're a little bit more well-designed this time around.
Right. Well, it's cool to see it, too, because in this webisode, it lets you follow how they're going. So you get to see not only how it began, that they were human, and then you get to see the montage of them becoming the cybernetic, but then you also see they're not the first ones to have done it, because the guy who comes in to show off and let them fight, he's a prototype. Smoke.
Yes. Well, Smoke, I think the less we talk about him, but again, now that we move forward, I'm actually kind of anxious to see what Smoke will do.
Right.
And I'm sure we will.
It's about for the episode, something to demo Cyrax and Sektor with, because with the entirety of Legacy 2, you never see Smoke show back up.
Yeah. But it was cool to at least see the fact that this wasn't just, oh, hey, we decided to, you know, talk a bit and have an idea, and now here we have Cyrax and freaking... It's not that. You get to see a whole idea and concept come to life, and not only do you have a finished product, but you get to see that finished product in all of its freaking epic glory go up against the previous prototype to show just how much more badass they are than the previous.
Yeah. Here's one thing that I really enjoy about Legacy. And this is why it gets my highest rating of a 5 out of 5.
Yep.
The special effects here are not... And this is what I was afraid of for a webisode. That this would be the Sci-Fi Channel type of special effects. Oh. And it's not.
Sharknado! Yep! Sorry.
I thought the makeup would be really, really direct-to-DVD low-budget, and it's not. No. I thought the acting would be that way. I thought the editing, the music...
They had a low budget. Sean looked it up. They had, like, what was it, $40
billion? It was a $40 to $50 million budget.
They had a $40 million budget.
True. I will agree to the $40 to $50 million budget, but... Today, yeah, that would be considered a low budget compared to the $200 and $300 million budgets we have today. Just all I'm saying.
Paranormal Activity, that was a low budget.
Yeah. I love the acting. I was never bored by any story. The Raiden, I think, and it's been said how it's bothered some people. You have a stunt coordinator on this. You have a trainer on this. There, you have behind the scenes features, and they're showing how Raiden is going to take somebody and throw him against the wall, and how it's going to look like if a demigod did throw you up against the wall. The stories make sense. Maybe each story being 12 minutes apiece is not such a bad idea, but the problem is I wanted more. A lot more. And I'm glad... You know, sadly, it would take 2 years before we got Legacy 2. But I can only imagine the people that got into this had to wait about a month or two to get the next episode, and especially a two-parter.
Yeah.
This is... I wish there was an audio commentary.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of behind-the-scenes on this Blu-ray disc. 5. The highest rating and probably the best Mortal Kombat movie I've seen in a very long time. And that's saying a lot. What about you? What did you think on this one?
5 really just isn't enough. This one, it exceeded all expectations when it came to anything that could have had the Mortal Kombat honor of being anything closely related to that universe. You had amazing concept stories that were brought to life and given love, and you see the passion in every episode that you watch of it, and it gives you those inner chills, and you get the little geek out moments when your favorite person comes on that screen. There is just no way to surpass it. There's none. I mean, they did 100% from beginning to end, perfectly done. Perfectly done.
Ed, what'd you think?
I don't have a then and now ranking for this one, so... perfect score on this. I mean, they completely took everything that I'd seen before and made me forget it and showed me what it was really supposed to be like. They made me love every second of Mortal Kombat again and re-sparked my vigor of wanting to be able to play the games again, too. And they only got better when they gave us Legacy 2. So, perfect marks on this one for me.
So,
10 out of 10, 100%, whatever you want to call it. I love it.
Really?
My only problem is I had to wait for a year to get Legacy 2.
Yeah.
Now we have to wait, like, until God knows when to get Legacy 3.
They don't even know what
to do. Yeah, they don't even, it hasn't been confirmed.
Yeah, and that's what's going to piss a lot of people off. But we'll get there next week when we talk about Legacy 2. But again, listeners, thank you so much. And we've reached a 1,300 download, which is awesome and climbing. We've got geeks of the industry that have shared a couple of our episodes, including the May the 4th episode where I talked about the Ewok Adventure movies, which I thought was interesting. I have a couple of other sites right now that are sharing our work and promoting our work, so I did want to take this time out to thank United We Sleep Comics. They not only saw your work, Kendra, because, you know, I was sharing the stuff on Facebook. United We Sleep Comics, he's also interested. He may be contacting.
That's Until We Sleep Comics, sweetheart, and that's one of my companies.
That's right, yeah. Well, that would be Sean. Sean, of course. I didn't realize at first, but yeah, I did talk to Sean the other day at Free Comic Book Day.
Nice.
So, I'm actually going to be reviewing his Until We Sleep comic in the next few days.
You did, I thought you talked to Bobby Gar.
Yes, I did speak to Bobby Gar, yes. But there's also somebody else I spoke to as well, yes. Sorry, we were just breaking up. There was a second person as well, besides Bobby Gar from Until We Sleep. There was another booth, separate. His name is Sean. He's also working on an independent comic, Freeloader. He's also, I think you've seen his work too, yes. He's also, he wanted to set up a booth with me next week over at Atlantic City Comic Con, which I thought would be nice. And of course I'm going to Wizard Con this weekend, handing out some more cards. And of course, as you know, I'm going to be working on a special podcast called What a Haul. Because as you know, on Free Comic Book Day, I hit 5 stores within 8 hours and got like 30 different comic books. So I will be reviewing, discussing them, set up some interviews, close to 11 interviews I'm going to be having in the next few weeks. So, and most of these from independent artists, so this is going to be interesting. Not to mention the fact, your good friend, Tamara Manor, as you know.
Yes.
We had a great conversation for the Mother's Day Mommy Dearest episode. That'll be up this Sunday, May the 10th, Mother's Day. And then, of course, I have another interesting retro series, Can Water Be Watered Down If We Add More Water to It? As you know, Jurassic World is coming out. I have found the most watered-down dinosaur movie ever for the 80s. Oh, Baby God. Secret of the Lost Legend.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw that bitch in theaters.
This one, I could not believe this is on Blu-ray. Now, it does have the greatest American hero in this one, and it's got Sean Young and an animatronic Brontosaurus. So this is going to be one of the most fucked up episodes we ever did. This is going to be interesting. We still got Demolition Man, we got Legacy 2, and of course we're going to eventually have to go into Street Fighter, because as I said, yes, we are going to be doing that right before Memorial Day weekend, no less. So this is going to be interesting. But again, Kendra, do you have anything new to promote?
I do. I came prepared tonight, so I'm not, like, on the spot without remembering who I need to, like, shout out to. I'm so proud. All right. So, we have Night Owl for Exciting Comics as well as Unknown. So please check out Exciting Comics, Night Owl. There's a great art team on it with me, Phil Williams Jr., and Nicole Pandadesh. There is Until We Sleep, of course. I'm on the Angel Wars for them, as well as a couple other books. I have, oh my gosh, Ravenfish Studios. I'm going to be working with them on a secret project. But go check their page out. It's me, Joe Gallagher. Amazing artist, Timothy Teague. I bow down at his feet because that man makes my fingers hurt when I do his work. And then, what else we got coming up? We've got Wonder Funders. I mean, honestly, just check out anything on my page. I post everything almost daily. So just find me, Art of Kendra Hale, and come say hi.
And of course, now she's now the co-host of On a Galcast. Yeah. And she is stoked on this one. She was doing the happy dance today, folks, and she's doing it again now, so. So, until next time, folks. We have a lot going on this summer, a shitload of stuff going on this summer. And I thank each and every one of you, and until next time, your souls are mine.
Are you looking for a weekly dose of gaming news and retro? Then check out Off the Cuff, available Fridays on Geekcast Radio Network from the producers of XRG. New name, same